This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Today, my guest is Shu Ogawa, who is here from Los Angeles, California. He had moved to the U.S. in 2003 from Tokyo, Japan, and actually was known better over there as kind of a stage magician. He goes into some detail about some of his history and where he had worked and what he had done on this podcast here today. But during the time here, he was named Close-Up Magician of the Year by the Academy of Magical Arts in 2003, the first year that he had come here, and also at that time knew very little English. It's been improving all along as he's continued to live here in the States for the last 12 years. He still does a lot of international travel, and he'll talk about some of that in the podcast here as well. But he had again come back and won Close-Up Magician of the Year at the Castle in 2006, and then Parlor Magician in 2008. I'd worked with him at Colon, Michigan, at Abbott's get-together a while back, and it was the first time that I had seen him in his stage act or his parlor act, and it was very impressive, certainly. Very creative guy, and if you've not had a chance to see him do something on stage, you need to make a point of catching him at a convention or someplace where you have an opportunity to see that. Of course, Shute is best well known for the ninja rings and his muscle pass, which he had introduced to the U.S. Magicians after he had moved here. So, he has a lot to talk about, very fascinating young man, and I think you will enjoy this podcast with Shu Ogawa here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and right now I have with me as a guest someone all the way from Los Angeles, actually I guess from Japan by way of Los Angeles, Mr. Shu Ogawa. Hi there, Shu.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Thanks very much for coming tonight and also for lecturing. So you're kind of on a little bit of a lecture tour, and you've already been where, you said, so far?
The New Orleans and also the Dallas and San Antonio.
And San Antonio. And from here in Houston, you're going on to Albuquerque.
Albuquerque, and also that I'm going to Tucson in Arizona.
Okay. Yeah. Now, have you been on another lecture tour this year, or is this your first kind of a mini tour?
Let's see. I don't know, but basically I'm flying out to the different country, one or two country per month.
So means really?
I'm really traveling every month. Almost 2 weeks a month I'm out of a city. Mm-hmm. So, and then I have to backtrack every month. So you know, I have to see my scheduler. So I don't know where I went to. But I did lecture in Peru last month. And also that was in China last month as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm going to the next convention in a week. So, you know, I'm traveling a lot.
That's right. You're going, well, you say convention. I know that you got the Daytona Magic Convention coming up in November.
But before that, I'm going to the Thin Air in Reno.
Thin Air with, Larry Wilson.
Yes, yeah. It is a great convention. It's connected to the local, you know, like the educational program.
Mm-hmm. And so, the library trying to raise money for that.
Yeah, it was really fun. I was there last year, and I'm going back again.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just talked with him and posted that podcast last week, mm-hmm. and he was saying that he was going to be expanding it a little bit here this year, and that mm-hmm. last year they had 3,000 people who showed mm-hmm. up, and so what was your experience with that? I mean, did you have a lot of people?
Yes, it was great, because it is kind of a combination with a magic convention for magician, and also mm-hmm. the like a lay audience show, but a very public show. So when I performed, some of the library where it's having kind of theater, which, you know, that they set it up, you know, some special occasion. But when I perform for the theater, sometimes old families, sometimes like teenagers, a lot of teenagers. Sometimes you know, babies crying in a show, and I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
So people enjoy, and you know, people laugh when I'm in trouble with baby.
Yeah.
So, but it was a great experience, and I really feel like a connection with the local people who lives there and who never see really good magic show before. So. Hmm. A live show is very important, because we can feel it, and we mm-hmm. can, you know, have a great experience.
That's a good point. You know, this Larry was saying that there are a lot of people who had not seen magic before, and I was kind of mm-hmm. surprised, because I thought, gosh, this is in Reno, mm-hmm. like Las Vegas, where you have shows that come in, you mm-hmm. have these top names and everything, but a lot of the locals can't afford this, and this was a mm-hmm. free show.
Yes, it is. So it's a pretty amazing idea, and Larry is a great producer.
Yeah.
So, and because, you know, he wanted to create a good experience for the people, local people. Mm-hmm. And again, they never really see the good magic show. They might see on the TV or YouTube, but they never see a live show.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, like, you know, the last year we had me and Leonard Green, and also the John Carney and Bob Sheets. It was really fun, and also good magician for the magicians as well.
Yeah.
So, and we had a really fun time, and everybody had a performance for the four different library. So mm-hmm. we just rotate, you know, each location every day. So it means that, like, you know, I went to four locations, 4 days, and they also had a...
They're all libraries? Where you
all perform? Libraries, okay. Four libraries.
They couldn't have very many people that would be seated. I mean, do they have like a
some
theater?
Some of the theater, has, like they set up theater. So
oh,
no,
really?
Not like a just table and a
oh,
flat floor. They
that's
set
all
up chair,
thinking.
Like a stairs.
Really?
And they can see from upper side to the, you know, yeah. looking down. So like almost like a parlor of a presidential at the castle.
Now do they set up, yeah. oh, like parlor, okay.
Yeah, like they look down from
do
the
Do they have a... image magnifier, some, I mean, do they, so you can do close-up, or is it more stage that you're doing at that point?
I was doing kind of stand-up parlor size, but it was mm-hmm. close enough to some of the close-up performance, and I think I perform about 30 minutes and 35 minutes-ish.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not too long, but not too short. You know, they feel like a theater show.
Sure.
So if they're like less than 15 minutes, they feel a little too short. So I really like mm-hmm. the 30 minutes long.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was like a kind of a parlor size, 70% parlor.
You know, speaking of parlor, certainly that I was kind of surprised whenever I was at Abbott's get together a couple of years ago when I first saw you performing on stage. Mm-hmm. And I say first saw you on stage because obviously I've seen you do a lot of close up, and mm-hmm. I had not taken that next leap to know that, you know, you do magic on stage as well. And I think it's a lot of times that we as magicians get kind of put into a box whenever that mm-hmm. I'm doing a show for a company, and then later they might book me and I say, well, I can also do strolling close-up magic, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. and they say, oh, really, you do that also? Or vice versa, where they've only seen me doing close-up and they don't mm-hmm. think about me doing a stage act.
Yep.
They kind of put you in a box. And
yep.
it was, unfortunately, I had done that for you.
Yep.
But you actually you were doing more stage magic in Japan when you came over here, and
yes.
they kind of developed a close-up.
Yeah,
act.
Before I moved to the States, I was doing before I moved to Los Angeles, I was being stage magician. The reason the close-up is big in Japan, and many of my friends, my co-worker, everybody did the close-up, but not many people did the stage, and I was the only one who did a lot of different stage magic. So, but I, when I moved to Los Angeles, I could bring only 2-3 luggage when I moved.
Mm-hmm.
So it means that, like, I had only close-up material plus my stage clothes and then only some of the usual things.
What'd you do with your stage stuff? You just left in Japan
I left in Japan, my parents' house, and
okay.
I brought to the States little by little, but I couldn't bring everything all together.
Mm-hmm.
So, but also, you know, the close-up is more convenient for the many of, you know, performance
sure.
situation for me because, you know, I don't have to have luggage so much for the traveling. So, but I really like the stage as well. But I would like to keep the good feeling as a close-up because close-up magic has a really good feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like
is that because you can relate to the audience because you're closer?
Yeah, distance is, of course, big, but also that we can do so many things with the close-up. And I'm trying to find out what is going to be the best way to make audience feel same feeling for the stage magic.
Mm-hmm.
So because I feel like somehow stage is very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Many people feel a little distance, unreality, and then something far, something, you know,
yes.
doesn't, like they're seeing almost a TV show.
Yeah, yeah.
So they don't feel like it's a real live show sometimes. And then, and this is the biggest homework for the many professionals. And I know that, like, you know, the David Copperfield and the many magicians in the world, they already challenged for this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Having big theater, they have to provide a show for the, you know, 1,000 audience or maybe 10,000 audience.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I would like to think, how can we provide the feeling of close-up magic for the maybe 5,000 audience?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a, like, you know, very big challenge. But
how do you
do that? Actually, the key is also the big show with the singers, because I went to some famous singer was performing for the 100,000 audience.
Wow.
And I think it was Harold to Rose Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Not Harold, like I think Pasadena or... Pasadena Rose Bowl.
Rose Bowl, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's big space, and then, you know, she performed. But it was distance, but they had a big screen. But also when they had some of the special effect, like a fire on stage, also we had some equipment, fire, torch or something around the far side of the audience from
mm-hmm.
the stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's far away, but I was kind of far, but they tried to virtually feel like, you know, we are feeling fire from stage, but actually it came from a different location. But like, it's a well key, how we're gonna see things with, you know, like a visual and also the, with the imagination. So, and then some of the people is doing many idea. Sometimes people use a truck you know, they make some stage on the truck, and you know, the singer is singing on the truck and driving around inside of a ball sometimes. You know, I saw this before.
Really?
So, okay. And like, you know, they are making some more of effort to kind of make people feel like they are in a show
sure.
together.
Yeah.
But for the magic, we like probably 90% of the magic is related with the vision.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, of course we use words, we use voice, and, you know, people hear sounds and people feel. Close up, we can also use people's sensitivity on the hands. We can make magic happen on the audience hand, which is one of the strengths for the close up magic.
Mm-hmm.
But we can to do that on stage. So I have to think, how can we approach for the five senses of human and make them feel like they're seeing the actual magic show
mm-hmm.
right next to them, right in front of them? That's a kind of a big challenge, but,
It is, because whenever that you're doing something close up, obviously that they have that sense of feeling because they have
mm-hmm.
that tactile sense that they're using when you're putting something in their hand or taking mm-hmm. a card, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And if they're on stage, unless you're using a volunteer,
yeah.
they're not able to use all their senses necessarily.
Mm-hmm. It's very difficult.
Yeah. And so then, in that case, how do you,
I have a few examples from my experience, but one of the interesting experience was, do you know Ayala?
Very well, yeah.
He's a great performer. I mm-hmm. love his performance style, and he has a lot of props, but he has value himself first.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, he had a perform in Malaysia with other magicians, like Joseph Gabriel was there, Jeff McBride was there, big names, you know,
mm-hmm.
the, and also
mm-hmm.
the Ed Alonso.
Mm-hmm.
And many performers there, but like it was 6,000 audience. And we had a huge distance from stage to the audience side. They had a big gap between stage and audience.
It's always death.
It's
yeah.
so sad.
Yeah.
And, you know, then even the Ayala did a great illusion with big equipment, huge stuff on
mm-hmm.
stage, full
mm-hmm.
size of the stage he
right.
was using. But unfortunately, audience couldn't feel that much magic as he can provide. Usually he provided really well, but like, you know, audience couldn't feel because I was in the audience at the time. I
yeah.
was not stage performer. So only one moment, like Ed Alonso did a few of a joke and he did some of act,
mm-hmm.
but audience loved it and connected really well. But he was not having big equipment as the Ayala, but he connected with the audience somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to say on the radio or podcast because, you know, I still have no answer for this, but like, you know, it is the key for something.
It is. And to me, I think it's because from what I've seen Joaquin perform, it has been silently or to music and
mm-hmm.
well choreographed and big
mm-hmm.
illusions and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And if you compare him to Franz Ferrari, for an example,
mm-hmm.
another guy who does huge
yeah.
illusions and
yep.
works in, you know,
he
big
does a
stadiums.
Lot of good stuff, yeah.
And he works in India and in Malaysia and places where there are tens of thousands of people
mm-hmm.
in the auditorium.
Yep.
The difference between the two of them is that Joaquin usually, when I again have seen him,
mm-hmm.
He's been part of a overall variety act as opposed
mm-hmm.
to Franz doing the show
uh-huh.
himself.
Yep.
And so, the main thing I'm getting to is talking,
mm-hmm.
is that Franz is able to engage the audience
mm-hmm.
as a lot of stage magicians are, where they'll do something big, then they'll close the curtains while they're setting up backstage.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be in the front
mm-hmm.
on the apron and they will be talking to the audience, do a torn restored newspaper,
yep.
you know, egg and silk, whatever it is, something in order to
mm-hmm.
kind of do a smaller thing, yeah, basically. Yeah, to connect to the audience and
yep.
then maybe talk to someone like they do
yeah.
at a comedy club where they're saying,
yeah.
hey, where are you from? You know,
yeah,
kind of
it's
a thing.
Yeah, this is like, you know, very important and very, like, you know, the special technique for the all of the stage performer, I'm sure. But also the Copperfield, he does amazing. He is working so hard and he had this homework 20, 30 years ago already.
Sure.
So, and he, you know, in Vegas, he does illusion inside of audience. And
mm-hmm.
also he does a medium-sized act backside of audience and also the front side of audience. And he is a spectator. He does
yeah.
illusion with mentalism because mentalism connects with brain, audience brain.
Right.
So, and amazing thing is his ticket in the theater is
mm-hmm.
everything same price. So backside seat is not cheaper.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. In the Hollywood, the Hollywood theater in, I don't remember the name of the theater, but it's MGM. So when I purchase ticket, pretty much most of the seat is exact same price. They don't make a different price, I believe.
Hmm.
So actually, you know, when you buy ticket from different website, it has different price. But when we see the seat, actually it's equal price, basically.
And that's because that he is able to relate to the same person in the front seat
that
as they are to the back seat.
The front side is not
that's
the best
really
seat. Like any seat is the best seat for him.
Sure, sure.
But I think, this is what I guess.
Uh-huh.
But one of the amazing challenge for all magicians is like, you know, how to connect with the audience, but he is in the middle, inside of, in the front and backside. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but also he's using a lot of, you know, medium size of act too. So, mm-hmm. and, you know, beautiful act with floating robes, with camera, projector, the backside of audience. So right. backside of audience feel like it's very special, but it projects for the front side. So right. big screen on the front. So people, front seat people have to wait and watch screen.
Sure.
So it's not the best seat sometimes.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, obviously front of the seat, stage right. is the best seat.
Well, then another thing, when you mentioned mentalism, that's something obviously that connects to people where
it's
they're
amazing,
seated.
It's amazing, amazing, you know, category in magic. And, you know, mm-hmm. people just surprised because, you know, the performer connects to the audience with only sometimes conversation mm-hmm. and like even no prop sometimes. So mm-hmm. which is having a lot of potential. I'm no mentalism guy, but like, you know, I respect that. Mm-hmm. It is having a lot of potential for the future.
It would seem that Darren Brown mm-hmm. would be taking advantage of that and charging yeah. the same. I have yeah. not seen his live show yeah. Nor paid for a ticket, so I don't know whether that they have different ticket prices, but yeah. it would seem from what you're saying that there shouldn't be any difference whether you're in the front row or the back row because they're yeah. having the same experience.
Yeah, only biggest difference is going to be the front row is closer to the performer, but David Copperfield's sure. case is he getting into the audience all the time. So I actually like I feel like the all audience seat is a stage for him, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
So but only condition is when he does illusions, most of the illusions have to be on stage.
Mm-hmm.
But like maybe one or two is happening in the
well,
audience.
Well, sometimes they yeah. yeah appear in the middle of the audience or yes. something, and so yeah. you're kind of suddenly the stage is the middle of the audience.
Yes, and it's a lot of work. But like yeah. they, you know, Chris and you know, Homer and the whole team is working so hard all the time anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I respect that. So, and then, you know, that's like, you know, the a lot of, you know, kind of, we still have to challenge many things. We have a lot of homework, but then connecting with audience with large quantity of people,
mm-hmm.
large audience, it's very difficult. And then I would like to see how I can challenge in these 5 to 8 years.
Have you ever had an opportunity then to be a consultant on any of the shows or provide some tricks
yes.
or something for some of these guys?
I did some, but not like big names in the magic, but mm-hmm. You know, that I sometimes consult for the, some professionals.
Wait, David Blaine or somebody on any of the TV shows?
No,
or
I like never that? Been like, I know that many people who support the brain and also that, you know, the other people. So because I know, you know, some of the creator from different countries or, you know, of some of my friends
mm-hmm.
Support like Cyril when he had TV series in Japan
yeah.
or for example David Brain or you know for example Darren Brown also had you know people actually mm-hmm. I think at the time Apollo was my friend you know Apollo mm-hmm. Robbins
yep.
he was being also the you know consult for the Darren Brown I think I don't remember but it was quite a while ago.
Well, Apollo also was a consultant for and had bit parts on Brain Games
yes.
on television.
And also he was consulted, he's, it's funny to talk about him, but like he's also consulted about for the Focus, the movie, Will Smith movie.
Which movie? Focus?
Focus.
Which,
Focus.
Yeah, it's, but what's that about?
He's like a scam artist, con artist, hmm. and he has a big team and, you know, making like, a, you know, many, The Will Smith is a person who does also pickpockets in mm-hmm. the story, but he's not just pickpocket. He's in charge for the big scamming team.
Oh, okay. Yes, I know so, what you're talking about. I did see that. That was with Will Smith.
Yes,
Will yes, Smith. Yes, okay,
Will
yes.
Smith, yes.
And so he was one of the consultants on the movie.
Yeah, and Apollo movie. Was being, you know, actually the, you know, the movie credit, usually mm-hmm. like a producer right. and, you know, the several people going to be on the fast.
Right.
And usually consultant for the magic part or like mm-hmm. pickpocket part, like a, the you know some coordinator is a really low position
yeah, yeah.
but I think his name was really top after
oh, really?
Producer
mm-hmm,
which
good.
Is very rare
yeah.
and really amazing
well that was a key from, part of the whole movie I think
yeah but still they do not have to put his name on that
top point.
But he was connected with the crew and mm-hmm. the director and all like you know people who works there and also the, you know that
how did you get to know Apollo to begin with how did you meet him
we worked at the castle
mm-hmm. just happened to be working there the same week
and I was in a close-up and he was in a parlor
and then had some time
yeah,
to hang out.
It was the first time for him and for me and it was the last time for him and because he was not interested about the you know Magic Society that much at the time
mm-hmm.
of course we did a convention and the tours together because for fun mm-hmm. and he doesn't know disrespecting other but like you know that we had a just really fun time there at the castle we
yeah.
hanging out and we become best friends so.
I think it's one of the fun parts certainly of working a week at the castle is that you have time really to spend with people during the daytime because they
yeah.
have nothing else really to do and just
yeah,
kind of hang
exactly.
out let's go to the
you
museum
have
or have
do.
Lunch or whatever
yep.
you know
we did and mm-hmm. we had a just lunch at the I think California Pizza Kitchen instead of a mall
mm-hmm.
and then we I think we used only the dictionary like a digital dictionary to communicate. So I didn't speak English.
Yeah.
So, and like many magicians, become friends because the castle.
Yeah, that's true. Well, when you came over, speaking of that, from Japan, did you know English very well? And why did you decide to come here?
Well, I did not know English. Only I had a script.
Mm-hmm.
20 minutes of a close-up performance script. That's it.
But you didn't know exactly what you were saying. Necessarily.
I kind of understood like a 65%.
Okay.
But all script which I'm speaking is just memorized. But I do not know what it exactly means.
You were thinking in Japanese. You weren't thinking in English.
I'm just thinking script. So yes. I'm not thinking about even English. I even don't know if it is English or not. You know, if some of my friends who wrote this script, if he put the Spanish, I didn't know it. So just I spoke only this. So when I performed, actually audience know that I have a lot of language barrier, but still people believed I understand what audience react, what audience said. Mm-hmm. But actually after the show, you know, the great thing about the castle is after the show, performer come out from theater and the people is drink at the main bar and they find performer and they talk to performer. Hey, it was a great show. And I couldn't say anything. And they said, you kidding me? Really? You really don't speak anything?
That's interesting.
And
I didn't even know
how to say it. So, and they said, oh my God. And they brought other friends and they around me and they were laughing so hard, but I had no, I didn't say anything because I couldn't say anything.
You didn't know how to respond because you didn't know what they were saying.
Yeah, exactly. I even don't know what they was talking about, but I'm sure that they thought I speak a little bit more because I was performing.
Sure.
I was responding for the audience, but I just felt and I just react.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah. You know, my good buddies, Fumio Inagaki, who was the one who actually invented the UPC gag many years ago, moved from Japan to Odessa, Texas, out in West Texas, and he was an optometrist or an oculist, I guess, because he would grind glasses and stuff. But he didn't speak English, and so he learned English by watching television shows. Mm-hmm. So is that one of the ways that you have really learned a lot?
Early time I was in language school, but level zero, like a start, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Nobody speak English at the time around in my class. So it means I spoke better than other, I believe. But soon I found a friend TV series. And then, you know, I'm still using a lot of a phrase or maybe timing of a joke or like, you know, just moment acting from Friends. Because the main characters having a lot of different type of acting style plus, you know, many joke in it. Sometimes just physical joke or just, you know, the reaction. So I study from that TV series a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm still watching all the time.
Now, when you are speaking then now, you've been in the States for how long? You've been here for 15 years?
14 years.
Yeah. Do you still think in Japanese and then interpret, or are you thinking in English?
I'm just thinking in English.
And you dream in English?
I dream in English.
Yeah, okay. Sure. And is it kind of funny when you go back then to Japan sometimes of having to...
Yeah, when I hit my toe on the somewhere and I just say... or like, you know, I say, ow. Japanese people don't say ow, right? So I just people look at me and I say sorry in Japanese.
Yeah.
But like, you know, the first words come up is... mostly English.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think in Japanese. So.
Yeah. Let's go back, I guess, kind of the beginning. We were talking about working in different conventions and going to Reno, but you had just returned from Japan. And before we got online, we were talking about working in China. And that was the tour, I guess, Mike Miller and the guys had put together.
Yeah, actually, I was visiting China. It was a business meeting, but I put a business on the side. Basically, I also visited the same tour. So the several performer from Timothy Trust from Germany and also the Topaz. They were performing stage tour. I was being close-up tour in China, but it is the same client. So when I was there, they were really welcoming me because I was just visitor this time. So, but it was kind of same organizer, yes.
Okay. Yeah. And you then were, who were the other guys that you said that you were with this time? Did Rocco was with you?
At the time, yes. When we were doing tour in China, actually we did it twice. So first tour which we did was... I think Henry Evans, Mago Miguel, and also the Rocco, and me, and who was it? Who else? I think four of us. Leonard Green. Leonard Green. Yes, okay. It was an amazing tour. It
was really was Cosmo part of that? Was he taking video?
Yeah, Cosmo was being cameraman. He did a really good job for that, too. Yes.
It seems like I talked with him, and he was talking about how that you guys were treated like rock stars.
Yes, yeah.
What was that like?
Again, Rockstar, five-star hotel, always they take care of everything. And even when we have any small trouble, the organizer and the assistants come over to us and make sure everything goes right. And, exactly, Rockstar. And then, but also the interpreter was working hard and all people working hard. And I couldn't feel any stress, it's hard to say in a podcast, China. How to say this in
air quotes.
Yeah, China. So China, I didn't feel anything bad way. Mm-hmm. But, of course, we had a hard time to communication because the boss does not speak English.
Right.
So a couple of people was really working, pushing them hard. But,
the interpreters or translators, you mean?
No, or? Translator is under the, their boss. So, the organizer in my side. And also at the time, the Hank Moore.
Yeah,
that he was
Morehouse.
Hank Morehouse. He was he booked us first time. So and then when I was there, Cosmo was trying to say everything what we want to say, but performer cannot say everything because we don't want to be rude.
Sure.
But also Cosmo was saying everything what we want to say, but he is very American.
Sure. So,
sometimes they had a hard time to communicate, but still someone had to say it. So Cosmo was a kind of a person, who said everything what we want to say. Mm-hmm. And then, he did a great job. And all performers treated really well anyway. So they take care about all food's problems because Chinese food is sometimes difficult for someone. I'm okay, but, many performers sometimes have a hard time.
Yeah, so too spicy or something, or maybe something they hadn't eaten before.
But, can you believe, if it's Japanese organizer, makes sense for me, but a Chinese organizer still remember what I liked or not. And what other performer liked or not.
Yeah.
And every city we go, they find same type of material, similar type of taste, and bring us for, all performer. Mm-hmm. So, that they really care about the performer. And
do you think that they particularly like magic, or they just like live entertainment, or that was Americans?
They are already related with the Chinese acrobat, and also many different, entertainer. Mm-hmm. And but they have a passion for the magic, especially before, FISM Beijing. They start to interest about magic so much, about 2007-08, they start to express about feeling of magic. Then this organizer start to organize many of the tour after FISM. Mm-hmm. So, and then they still have a passion for the magic more than other entertainment, which is great.
It really is, and I understand that the houses were pretty much sold out. I mean, they had booked them pretty solid.
It depends on the theater and it depends on the cities. Because, if it's in New York or, for example, Los Angeles, many show business. Las Vegas, many show business. But if we come to some of the foreign area, I shouldn't say any states because I feel like offending. But, if we go to some of the foreign area, people is not used to see the performance. Sure. Perhaps Reno, they are not really used to see the magic show. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited to go back this year because they saw last year and hopefully they talk about this and they want to come back more.
Right.
And I would like to see kind of result from last year's experience.
Now, how many cities did you go through? You remember how many cities in China?
In China, it was 29 shows, or about 30 shows for the 2 months, about 7 weeks.
Okay.
So and then about the 20 cities, about 17 to 20 cities or something like that. Some of the big city we did 3 shows.
Now all the guys that you're talking about actually were pretty much close up or stand up parlor type performers like Rock on Smith. I mean, I didn't hear you really saying any big illusion guys, like Mark Kalin or anybody.
Yeah, it is. I know that many good illusionists, but I think this organizer, so far, last 4 or 5 years, that this organizer was focusing close up, stage at the stage.
And all the technical equipment worked great. I guess they had big screens and cameras and everything.
Yeah, so they set it up for the close up performance.
Right.
So, and when I did the tour, first time, Rocco is the only guy who does stage.
Yeah,
and then because Rocco's performing styles are different. Correct. It's great for the big theater. He presents really well. He connects with a big audience, and he walk around stage, as you know. Mm-hmm. He just walks aside and giving some of I don't know, chewing gum or something for the audience, and the kids running to there. Right. And then, like, he go other side and he produced some of, like, you know,
popsicle
ice cream and whatever. Uh-huh. So he's amazing guy, as you know. But we are doing, like, Mago Miguel was kind of a stand-up. And Henry Evans is a great close-up guy with camera. He is really good about camera.
I heard he was really like a standout hit.
He's very, very good. And also, the I was being kind of middle because I can do stand-up show. So mm-hmm. stand-up and close-up. Because Rocco was valuable because all other performers was a close-up guy, right? Mm-hmm. And I was also doing kind of stand-up stuff. So also it helped other close-up
to break
too.
Up a little variety.
So it just makes the contrast.
Gotcha.
So, but, you know, the Mago Miguel is a great, likable performer. He's like a good for the host. You know, if he...
Oh, he was the MC.
Yeah, mm-hmm. he was like a MC type of character. So mm-hmm. He performed... Do you know Squeaker? Like a squeaker?
Yes. Yeah.
And he just have this in the mouth. Like, yeah. the, like okay. only just with the, that
yes.
sounds.
Yes, yes.
He performed 7 minutes with this for what? The audience. For the Chinese audience, 1500 audience.
And they loved it, I guess.
And yeah, the, and nobody say, because Mago Miguel do longer than, always, like, you know, longer than 20 minutes. You know, we're supposed to do 20 minutes, but he does 25, 27. But organizer cannot say too much because it works.
Yeah, it's working.
And then, you know, then he is one of the most likable performer. Audience mm-hmm. love him. Audience remember him. So I respect, you know, how he connect with audience. So, but you know, I don't say he's a close-up guy. He's a Mago Miguel, you know, like like the same as one Tamariz. One Tamariz, just one Tamariz.
That's right.
So, and then
now, they speak in their own native language, and then they were translated also?
We have a translator.
But what I mean is, was Mago Miguel speaking...
He speak English.
Okay. And also Henry Evans, did he?
Speak English, yes.
Okay, okay.
So basically, the you know, Spanish performer spoke English. Even like I did tour twice. Second time also we had two Spanish performer. And also Xin Lim was on the tour too, which is 2013. Mm-hmm. So two Spanish guy, including Mago Miguel, he was also there again. But he performed in English.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I, you know, Squeaker is not English, basically. So, you
know, that's why I guess the audience could relate to.
And when I see that one, like, I feel like, what the heck I have in my luggage? Like, you know, just in my, it's the same thing with many performers, like, you know, illusionist as well. I have boxes, but that guy, Squeaker. And he performed 7 minutes and almost standing ovation. Like, you know, just audience loved him. So, you know, I think it was one of the great team. And Leonard Green, he was already popular.
Mm-hmm.
In China, believe it or not, he already did the TVs and also tours before. So people already expecting Leonard Green. So mm-hmm. he was a superstar already when we were doing the tour together.
Mm-hmm.
So which means that all performers had different strengths. So Mago Miguel was likable kind of host type of character. And Henry Evans provided close-up show with camera. I was mm-hmm. doing stand-up and close-up kind of, you know, Japanese-American guy performed a little bit unique stuff. And Rocco. Stage and you know also the amazing persona.
So it's probably what about an hour and a half hour and
yeah, hour and a half, like a 90 minutes to 100 minutes. That's mm-hmm. was you know goal always. So sometimes it's longer, sometimes slightly shorter.
Did you take a break? I mean, in order to clean up after Rocco.
Rocco is always last.
Oh, okay,
as you know, we have to clean up stage at the end. So Rocco is always good and for the ending. So and again, like a Rocco closed show really well. So and also the when we did the show with Xin Lim, Xin Lim was closing act as mm-hmm. well. So mm-hmm. and the organizer somehow found out who's gonna be the best for the closing show, and you know we had another opinion, but this show went really well anyway.
Mm-hmm. So. And you say they're gonna do it again this next year as well, and who's
I,
on?
I hope so. I'm hoping so.
You know who's
actually,
on tour?
Actually, I got already off, not offer, but like an I kind of got a request for the 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So which means that, you know, they're already thinking about 2016 and already booked performer because, you know, they should be ready at the end of the year. They have to promote right away.
That's true.
So, and then, you know, but I already had a conversation about 2017. Hopefully it happens. I'm not signing any contract yet. But I think, you know, this kind of organizer and this kind of situation is very important because performer treat as a rock star.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a fine income and having a lot of respect. Mm-hmm. And also the organizer want to provide this kind of art of magic from all over the world
right.
to the China to
right.
educate people to see something more than something amazing stuff.
Sure.
So it is great for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I hope that, you know, the organizer doesn't get tired about magic. You know, they, you know, keep this passion for the 5 years and 10 years.
Right.
So it's great for the Magic Society as well. Many performers get gigs and, you know.
Well, there certainly are a lot of people that they could bring in and continuing to rotate and have more variety. I mean, the people mm-hmm. they've had obviously are great and top notch.
Yep.
And after the second or third year, I would think that some of the locals who were in these cities say, well, I've already seen this guy, so mm-hmm. they may not necessarily come back out to the show. So if you bring in somebody else like Juan Tamariz who hadn't mm-hmm. been there before or something, yep. you know. Yep. So I can kind of see that then too.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But they are also using a few of like a organizer from USA, from like Europe area.
Yeah.
So like this main boss having few different people in the different countries to research and mm-hmm. Bringing to them about new performers.
So, can you tell me a story, something that happened that was kind of unusual or fun that was stand out in your memory as being?
It's one memorable thing. Thing was this, like when right before the China Beijing FISM. We were doing tour like with Leonard Green and Henry Evans and Margot Mead and other. But when we were having vacation, but many TV program came over to for the interview because it was also kind of a promotion for the FISM.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we went to the tour, different cities, we wanted to promote about FISM. Of course, you know, the organizer contacted the local TV programs and also radio and whatever. So we were walking on the kind of a shopping district area. Me and I think... Henry Evans and I think Cosmo was there. And Mago Miguel was kind of walking far away, but the organizer said, hey, TV director asked you to do something amazing stuff, street magic. Just think about it. I'm not a street guy, but I know some TV, and also I have some of the team right there. So I talked to the Henry Evans and the Cosmo right away. So what I did is, I have some of cam, of souvenir store have cam, and also some case for the coin. So, and then also I asked Henry, hey, Henry, can you do this? And hey, Cosmo, can you do this? We discussed like 5 minutes and we impromptu performed for the camera. Mm-hmm. So first, Cosmo, can you make a crowd in 2 minutes?
Well, Cosmo that's said, my job.
Yeah, that's my, exactly. He said, oh, that's easy.
Yeah.
I cannot do that. But like Cosmo can do it. And sure. I said, hey, can you do it? And he throw a coin on the floor and everybody look because, you know, everybody look coin, right?
Yeah.
And he kick a coin for the kids and kids kind of afraid because should I take this or not? And everybody kind of look kids and everybody look him and he's a beard guy and a white guy and running to the kids and he start to entertain. 2 minutes later, bam, like 30 people around. And now I act like a performer, TV performer. I said, I bring a camera. Hey, look me and come over here. And I pick up souvenir store things, cam and case. And I ask audience to, hey, can I have this? And I put, I think a coin case in a cam. Almost like in a double layer, right?
A coin case.
I put coin case inside of a cam.
Wow.
Cam. Small cam, like a souvenir cam.
You're saying the coin in the cam, but not a coin case in the cam.
Yeah, and like it's a double layer now.
Okay.
And then also souvenir coin inside.
Yeah.
Of this coin case. So it means like a coin in a coin case.
Oh,
in
I see
cam.
What you're saying, a little plastic coin case.
Sure. And I had a can, and hey, Henry, could you hold this for me? And I asked, hey, a camera, could you come over here? And I pick up some local guy's coin. Hey, do you have a coin? Mm-hmm. I borrow a coin. But same time, Henry switched the can with his sleight of hand with, the misdirection because I was performing.
Sure.
And I did a little coin trick with these kids and this fun stuff, and cameraman shoot it. And hey, can I have this cam? And I vanish this coin and change the souvenir coin, which is supposed to be inside of a cam, inside of a coin case.
Mm-hmm.
Then I look the cam, which audience holded already, because Henry passed for the audience.
Yes.
So it looks like a miracle. Now we open the case, and coin case in it, in a cam, and inside of a coin, this case has audience coin in it. Of course, I didn't have a sign, but just impromptu, I started.
Sure.
And people really think it's amazing, and people surprised, and the cameraman and the director was so happy. Funny thing was, after this performance, the organizer came over and he said, I will pay this money for this can and this coin case because I want to have this as a souvenir. So it means that this organizer kept this can. some kids see the show and, hey,
sure.
Can I keep this for the souvenir?
Yeah.
The organizer for this magic event kept this case for the souvenir. And, he got signature from me.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I got credit. But actually, Henry worked hard and Cotton worked really hard.
But you were the one who was on the camera.
Yeah, because it is a teamwork. So sure. I only entertained little coin trick at the, at the middle of the show. But Cotton made a cloud, in 2 minutes, which I can't do.
Mm-hmm.
And Henry did the best switch. As he's good about switch.
So it's all a team effort to make the whole thing.
Yeah, and it's always good to have a good team. We shouldn't work just ourselves.
Yeah.
We need 2-3 people. But it was one of the success because it was on TV, mm-hmm. and you know, it made people amazed and people talk about this still. So,
did they do other TV spots after that? I mean,
we did some of the TV, you know, interview, some of the, like a kind of Jay Leno type of show, like a nighttime, you know, like
talk show
type of things. We guest performer was there. It was also fun,
mm-hmm.
but one of the memorable thing was that street magic because nobody was a street guy except Cosmo,
right?
But he was supposed to be hide behind camera because he was cameraman.
Yeah,
and he was. You know, he actually hide really well, but he was a good crew and a good magician.
Right.
So, but you know that he's supposed to be not being on front of camera, so he was just making crowd and just step back.
Well, what was that like in China to begin with? Being a communist country, were there certain things that you could or couldn't do as far as whether you were going to be shown certain things or shielded from seeing other kinds of things? Or
I'm sorry.
Did you have any kind of an issue with the government? Yeah.
No, actually, for this event, no. It very depends on the, I think, organizer and how they approach for mm-hmm. the government. So, and then I kind of separate the gig in China, which is also, you know, we can tell for the every country, but a gig with the government China
mm-hmm.
or a gig with the government city, like Beijing or Shanghai,
mm-hmm.
or the corporation or a personal solo organizer. And it depends. And, you know, very lucky because FISM was connected to China, so which means they're like the biggest clients. So the FISM China was connected to China. You know, government, which means that they had a lot of support from money from the
China. The government paid, right?
And also that this organizer must be international person to present Chinese culture for the performers and all guests.
Sure.
So it means that, like, you know, it was one of a good gig. So of course any country have any type of clients, which means a performer have some of liability for the some of different type of clients.
Mm-hmm.
But this gig was really good type of gig. I didn't have any issue for the visa. I didn't have any issue for the traveling. And then again, they took care like almost 200% for everything. So it was everything easy.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so because you're on television and all these billboards and posters and everything around town, I guess.
No problem. Everything.
Yeah,
and everything I got work visa as well. Like, you know, it's supposed to be, you know, work. We have to get a work visa always, of course, but basically.
Because you're not actually a U.S. citizen, I guess.
I am a Japanese citizen, Japanese passport.
Okay.
I mean,
yeah.
You know. I'm Japanese still,
yeah.
But you know if we see big picture, if they good big clients, they don't see small picture.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm good, you know, just good. If other performer is good, they recognize this is a good performer and they bring.
Mm-hmm.
But also I had some offer from the you know the smaller clients. I shouldn't say small, but like you know solo or you know small corporation. And then sometimes I had issue because sometimes they couldn't afford my fee
mm-hmm.
because no fee because I'm Japanese. So it is an issue obviously. But you know that I think you know. We shouldn't, especially Magic Society, we should not have that much issue between countries. So,
yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And we support all magicians in the world support each other. So, you know,
I think is part of the beautiful thing of our art that we can travel wherever and we have some commonality.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we can't break the language barrier, we can still do the same double lifts.
Yeah, exactly. And then we respect and we try to help. So I don't know, somehow, because maybe we share a secret. But just imagine if you go to the different country yourself and you don't know anything and you only have internet to contact some local magician. Hey, I'm a magician from, you know, the Texas and I need help. I need to spend time here a few days and I need someone to help. Do you have anyone who can spend time with me? I think we can find magicians just contacting you like in 2 hours.
Almost anywhere.
Yeah, anywhere, any countries pretty
much. That's true.
So, which is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So we cannot say, hey, I'm a tennis player and any tennis player can help me. We can't do that in a different country.
Not quite the same.
So only Magic Society said, really? Even don't have to be big name. Hey, I'm, you know, from somewhere and any local magic shop.
Yeah.
Go to the magic shop, talk to the guys.
It used to be that when we had the Yellow Pages mm-hmm. that people would advertise as a magician in the Yellow Pages.
Mm-hmm.
And I mention that because a lot of people don't even know what the Yellow Pages are anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That, because you've got Google, obviously you don't need the Yellow Pages.
Yep.
Although they're still around. But it used to be whenever I would travel and I would be in some small town, sometimes mm-hmm. in a city, but oftentimes mm-hmm. in a smaller town, and would mm-hmm. just at night be looking in the Yellow Pages. I'd call up somebody. I'd just look at the magicians. Yeah, just out of the blue. I didn't know them. They didn't know me.
Uh-huh.
I'd say, hey, I'm Scott Wells and I'm in town. I'm in you know, Sioux City, Iowa, or wherever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what are you guys doing? You got a club meeting or whatever? Are you available? And sometimes they say, yes, let's get together. We'll go meet at a bar or mm-hmm. something. And then we sit around and I'll show a trick. He'll show a trick. And then say, well, let me show you how this actually works. Turn around and show one of the people in the restaurant, you know, and just start performing around.
It's amazing. And
one thing
stuff.
Leads to another. I made a lot of really good friends. Pat Hazel was one of those guys, for an example. Mm-hmm. I used to go to Omaha, Nebraska, and mm-hmm. I had contacted him out of mm-hmm. the blue. And he was working at a restaurant, and it developed into a long-lasting friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other guys who are similar to that. So I think that that is something that's unique about our art, certainly.
Absolutely.
You mentioned about being a Japanese citizen. Then, are you considering getting citizenship in the U.S.? I remember Aldo Colomini.
Yeah, I'm considering, and also it's not too difficult process for me. Because I live here a long time, and I'm having green card more than 7-8 years, mm-hmm. so which is fine. But I also have several issues, you know, because I want to keep Japanese citizenship. But USA is accepting dual citizenship, but Japan doesn't. So Japanese.
If you come to the US, then you have to give up your
Japanese citizenship. So I do not want to do that. So
sure, I understand.
That's why, like, I'm kind of holding this. But,
yeah,
but you know, again, like a green card is good enough so far. So it's but green card is a extreme version of a visa. So it's visa. Mm-hmm. The government can take away from the people if they want to. So but if I become American citizen, you know, I'm a citizen, so they cannot take away citizenship.
Exactly, because, exactly. You know, so. Now, do you have to leave every couple of years or to go back to Japan for a couple months or
the
something?
The green card is, again, like, you know, the extreme version. It's kind of opposite. If I do not live in the States more than 6 months or a year,
mm-hmm.
they might going to make a problem for me. So
I
have to live
you
in
have
the
to
States.
Live here.
Yeah, because it's permanent residence card.
Okay.
So which means that if I go out from the USA, I try to keep up less than 183 days. So because it's a 183 days rule, simple rule, basically 6 months, you have to stay in the States, that's all.
Yeah.
So, but I can take gig inside of New York, Florida, or Texas. I can travel inside of States whenever.
Do you do a lot of traveling and performing corporate shows mainly, or what is your main?
Corporate show, yes, sometimes I do. In the States, only a few when I come back from out of country. Mm-hmm. The out of country, if it's Japan, I have a mix of gigs. Some of type is sometimes corporate gig, sometimes, you know, some of lecture only meeting, sometimes, you know, consulting someone.
So, now, when you say meeting, you mentioned that earlier in China, when you're going over for a meeting, are these meetings plans to work for another company, or are you performing at these meetings?
No, this one is my connection. Probably you already understand, but like your connection on the business in the magic is it makes money as well.
Correct.
So, and then, you know, even you do not have to perform. If you introduce, you know, two persons, it makes business sometimes.
Correct.
So, and I had that kind of situation. So I just introduced several people and then, you know, then connect them and then I get paid.
Yeah.
So, but same time, my main reason when I went to China was another reason is because I wanted to see this organizer because I didn't see them a long time. And these organizer, you know, sorry, it's kind of off content, but when we work together in, you know, long time, like a month or a couple months together, like we are like almost family, as you know, like some of the events crew and you know, performer connect really well.
Right.
But when I was in China, I feel like they are almost my family and close friends touring together and like, you know, try to survive in a different cities.
Sure.
So, and I really feel like a strong connection with these people. Doesn't matter Chinese, Korean, Japanese, or, you know, Spanish, doesn't matter. So, and then I really wanted to say hi. And then I was not calculating to get offer for the, you know, 2017 gig, you know, very lucky I got, fortunately I got the offer, but I was not calculating this part. So of course I was wishing if I booked that would be great, but like, you know, I was just hoping to say hi, hang out, having dinner together and drink together and just spend time, shake hand. That's the main reason I went to there. But very lucky I had this kind of opportunity to, you know, introduce two people. So, and then it covered my expenses and, you know, it paid pay my fee. So it was lucky.
Nice. Yeah. But when you're working in the U.S., a lot of those times are for different corporations that you're performing. Are you doing walk around strolling? Do you do a set show?
Usually I do like the kind of, not theater, but like I do 30 minutes, 40 minutes show.
Like after dinner kind of a thing? Like after dinner for the show?
Yeah, after dinner or yes. Some of the clients kind of recognized me so well. They had a ceremony and event, and they set up another room for the about 100 people seat theater. So but it's actually, like a ballroom, but they set up stage and they set up
everything. So after dinner, they go to your show. Wow, that's interesting.
It's a best for performer because we do not have to compete with meal.
No.
We don't have to have any distraction.
Right.
And they just come into the room to see the show.
That's
so
ideal.
So it's great for the performer, I think.
Do you have an agent that you work with or do you...
I do not have exact agent, you know, the popular agent or anything, but I'm booking myself and I have a couple people help my booking in the USA. I have one person who helped me to book all Japanese corporate gig and also the magic gig in Japan, one person. And also I have one person in Hong Kong, you know, he also marketing my name right now and he's trying to book my shows.
And some of the shows you're doing here that are corporate shows for Japanese, do you speak Japanese during those
If I perform in the USA, I use English and then I include a little Japanese in the middle of the performance. Mm-hmm. If it's a Japanese client in the USA.
Right.
Because they most people speak English and also the many of the clients, if who's from Japan, like I had some gig, Japanese VIP people came over from Japan. They come to Las Vegas. Actually, the top people for the different TV programs, and they had a business meeting and also vacation. And then I did a private show for the only 15 people.
Well,
and they paid really well.
Yeah.
And then I did a 30 minutes of theater show after the dinner. So, but they are not expecting or they are not wishing to see performer who speak Japanese. They're expecting American entertainment.
Yeah, so they were surprised.
And I said, hello everyone, I speak English and welcome to Las Vegas. My name is Shoot and I would like to show you something. They pause and they can look at each other. Okay, this guy looks like an Asian, but they, and they kind of get, I feel nervousness. And a few moments later, I said, oh, I'm kidding. I speak Japanese. And I started to speak Japanese a little bit and they laugh so hard because they get nervousness at the moment and they laugh and they break and they relax. And then I start speaking English, and when I feel that they are not understanding at a few moments, I add a little Japanese words, and they kind of understand. So at the end of the show, they feel like they saw English show, but they understand totally everything. So this is like actually illusion. Actually, I add Japanese, but they didn't understand which language they are hearing. They feel like they're seeing English show, but they understand completely.
Yeah.
So it is actually the key for the also stage performance for the, you know, the 10,000 people in the audience. They don't see actual magic, but they feel like they saw everything. So that's like, you know, the kind of feeling. But anyway, so I usually use English in the States.
Well, also going back towards the beginning and talking about Reno that you had mentioned about the Thin Air Summit, and I know that was something. Did they do that last year, or is this the first year they've done this?
I do not exactly.
I don't think they did it last year. When I talked with Larry, I think he was saying this is the first year. I just didn't remember.
Last year was the first year, probably.
They did do that last year with
I was guest last year.
Yes, but so, I mean, did they have the Thin Air Summit where they had you did lectures and everything? Then
yes,
for the magicians?
I did lecture.
Oh, okay.
I did a public show for the library for the 4 days, and then I did also the lecture and performance
for
and,
the magicians.
For the magicians.
Now, how many people do they have? Come like 30, 40, 60?
A little bit more than that.
It was fairly small group. I remember.
It was smaller than like a regular
convention. Yeah.
But again, they're connecting to the kind of how to say. Educational, I don't know, they're connecting to the city, but they combine two events together, I feel like.
Yes, there was a festival and then this convention, basically. So
it's a good idea because, you know, the payment for the convention is a little bit more than, you know, magic convention. But we work a little bit, you know, more days, couple more days, but, you know, not too much work, only a couple of shows a day. And then, you know,
they can spend, the magicians can spend more time intimately with you guys.
Yes, it's a, like another, you know, but it's a, like, I feel like 5 days of the event, but I think 5 days, 6 days. I think this is going to happen from Tuesday to Sunday.
Yeah, I think it's like the 20th through the 24th, so yeah, there's 5 days they got going on this year. By the time that this podcast airs, it will have passed by that time, so I know he's talking about doing it again next year with the success last year and what he expects to do this year. I'm sure that they'll do it into the future, because once you've started the ball rolling and it looks like it's working, I think he's going to continue
with
that.
I hope this year also have a better success than last year, so people expect more next year.
Sure.
So, and then... I think, you know, these days I really care about what's going to be happening after we finish the gig. So not because I perform and make money. That's not, of course, it's point, but no point. What's going to be happening next year or next day for the audience, how they feel about the event and how they're going to feel about magic in the future. This is more interesting part for me these days. So if we do some of amazing job and if they come back next year, it's gonna, you know, the audience is gonna grow up together. And then they're gonna talk about this more. And then I would like to see, you know, that this, how this event is gonna be happening in 5 years, 10 years.
Well, I think also to the point of what they're gonna be doing the next day and the day after, after the festival is over, in this particular case we're talking about then Spellbinders in Reno, that's trying to raise awareness for the public library. So people will be going to the library to see these shows. And so what the real proof in the pudding is of people afterwards, like, okay, well, now I know where the library is and I have already gone there. I think I'll go back again and again, even though there's nothing going on from the standpoint of any shows or whatever. I mean, there'll be something again, they'll come back next year, but between now and next year, will they go back again to the library, rent books, and actually support the library? So
yes, absolutely. And then people recognize where the location, and people want to come back again. That's exactly, you know, what they're looking for.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think that all things is changing with the internet these days, last 10, 15 years, of course.
Yeah.
But like one of the biggest things is the library having less people, but, you know, they have a nice internet these days and also nice AC and free everything. And then, like, you know, I hope library have a coffee shop. And, you know, it's going
to
be great.
See, the next thing, I guess, well, then you get, that's true, because most people go to the coffee shop and turn on their computer, and it's kind of quiet. It's almost like a library type setting in a lot of Starbucks and things like that.
And then bookstore has a, you know, coffee shop these days, of course. But bookstore also going away because Amazon and also internet stores.
A couple of things before we close over here. And you had lived near the Magic Island, Magic Castle. You moved closer to LAX, and you're flying around a lot right now, but you're thinking about moving back closer to the castle and kind of hanging out. What have been your experiences, or what kind of what's important to you? Why do you want to live close to the castle?
Of course, you know, close to the airport is important for me, but simply, if I just, you know, simply think about this situation, how many times I go to the castle a month and how many times I go to the airport a month, and I go to the airport probably about 4 times a month or 5 times maybe maximum. And I go to the castle probably like 10 times.
Okay.
That's the wrong reason. But this is like a funny answer. But the real answer is many people come to the castle from out of country, or sometimes, you know, out of city, or sometimes even local people come to the castle because the magic castle is one of the best place for the magicians or, you know, who loves magic. So, and then if I want to talk to the 3 magicians, it's better to meet up at the castle or some cafe around the castle because everybody's there. You know, as you said, like, you know, we performed there and we are staying around there for a week, and, you know, we have nothing to do basically. We hang out at the coffee shop or magic shop.
Right.
So, and then the magic castle is also a great hub for the many performers. Just, you know, people come from Europe, come over to the New York, come to the Los Angeles, and perform at the castle and go back to, you know, Europe. So the, it's a one of the best location to, you know, spend time with everyone. So after I moved to the airport area, I recognized that, like, every day when I want to meet someone, most of the time I have to drive to the Hollywood. Pretty much every day. Believe it or not, I'm driving a lot. Yeah. And now, you know, I'm driving like almost like 2 hours a day almost.
Wow.
So because I go to the some area, for example, Burbank, I go to the Northridge, I go to the, you know, for example, Torrance, wherever, I recognize everything is, you know, connected from Hollywood. So if I'm living in Hollywood, I can go pretty much everything close.
Exactly. You're in the middle of the hub right
there. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Then, you know, I realize all my friends live right next to my building where I used to live.
Yeah.
So, like, all performers moved from out of country because they love Magic Castle, they love States, and moved to the Los Angeles, Hollywood, and used to be Orange because Daivano also used to live on Orange, which is the right front of the Magic Castle, Orange Street. But the next street is Sycamore. Now many magicians live in the Sycamore.
On Sycamore?
One building have at least like 5 magicians, 6 magicians. And also, if we include employee of Magic Castle, like a 10 to 11, 12 people live in one building.
Yeah.
So it's such amazing street. So, but like, you know, again, the Magic Castle, you know, Academy of Magic Arts is only the one place in the world. So I would like to live right next to the castle all the time.
So you're going
to
move back there, you think?
I wish, even if I can, I want to move back in a week. Yeah. But like, I can't do because I'm traveling right now. So, yeah. But I'm thinking around March next year.
Sometime after first year, year in 16.
I already booked several works. So,
well, just to wrap up, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. And so I want to ask you then what your magic word is. What is your
magic word?
Yeah, what's your philosophy of life? What is it you live by? What do you, when you wake up in the morning, what's important? What do you think about? What what drives you?
I
mean, it doesn't have to be a word. It could be a phrase. You know what?
I do not know. But like what I always, like every few days I think about is like, I really appreciate I kind of meet up with magic. If I didn't start magic, my life could be totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And then because no magic and a gig, because magic makes me better person. Magic makes connection, and all connection makes me, you know, understand and study about life. And I feel like I'm getting better person because magic. So I just appreciate about opportunity to, you know, start magic when mm-hmm. I was young.
So your magic word really is magic, I guess.
Magic is exactly magic, and magic connects to the life. So, you know, it's pretty important for the many people, I believe.
Yeah, and you especially. Well, thank you, Shoot. I appreciate that very much. One last secret. I think that your real name is Makoto?
Makoto, yes.
How do you spell it?
K-O-T-O.
K-O-T-O, yeah. I learned that then this evening. So why'd you go with Shoot? Where did that come from?
Japanese Shoot is a Shuto. It's a different pronunciation. Shuto means like people coming around me. People come together and hang out and makes friendship. So that's what I wanted when I was young.
Yeah.
And then after 30 years of magic experience, finally I have a lot of friends.
You certainly do. You've got a lot of friends who are tuning in and listening to this podcast too, as well as me being one of your fans. And so thank you very much,
Shuto. Thank you very much.
I appreciate you being here. For the Magic Word Podcast, that was Shuto Gawa. And this is Scotty out.
I want to thank Shuto Gawa for being my guest on The Magic Word, and I hope that you enjoyed his content as much as I enjoyed chatting with him. He's quite a young man and has a very bright future in front of him. I guess magic is in good hands into the future. Certainly, he's going to be a good proponent of it across the world. Well, thank you again for listening, and if you have not yet had a chance to like us on Facebook, please do. Just go to facebook.com/TheMagicWordPodcast and like us, if you will, please. You can also help if you will just follow us on Twitter at MagicWordPod. And if you happen to have the ability to make a financial donation, you can donate through PayPal. Just go to TheMagicWordPodcast.com. Up in the top left, there's a place where you can actually give a one-time donation, or go to Patreon.com/TheMagicWord. That's Patreon with an R, Patreon.com/TheMagicWord. And you can learn more there about how that you can become an ongoing sponsor and pledge any amount that you want for as long as that you like. And if you enjoy the program and want to sponsor this program, we would certainly appreciate it, and you would become a friend of The Magic Word, one of my personal friends then too. So, until next time, be well, get booked, and sayonara. This is Scotty out.